For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Now, more than 4,000 confirmed COVID-19 cases in Virginia. Most are in northern and eastern Virginia, but the disease is also spiking in our region with dozens of cases in the Harrisonburg and Charlottesville areas. Meanwhile, Virginia sets another record in jobless claims. And as Mr. Rogers advised, we look to the helpers, particularly in the Stanton area, as Project Grows works to provide fresh, locally grown food to those experiencing food insecurity. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, April 10th. As of this afternoon, just over 4,000 people have contracted COVID-19 in Virginia out of more than 33,000 tested. According to the Virginia Department of Health, 109 people have died. 685 have been hospitalized, according to VDH. But if you count the number of people awaiting tests, nearly 1,300 people in Virginia are hospitalized due to the disease, according to the Virginia Hospital and Healthcare Association. While most of those cases are in eastern and northern Virginia, VDH reports 70 cases in Charlottesville and Albemarle County, and 60 cases in Harrisonburg and Rockingham County. State and local officials remind residents that the governor's stay-at-home order is still in effect as the number of cases spikes. One university that received donated ventilators to help train its nursing students is returning the favor. Shenandoah University in Winchester said on Thursday it has donated 3 ventilators back to Valley Health, which operates small hospitals in Woodstock, Luray, and throughout the Shenandoah Valley. The university received the ventilators several years ago as a donation from Valley Health to train nursing and respiratory therapy students. The ventilators can be used to treat patients suffering from COVID-19. Last week, the university donated 2,500 hospital masks to Valley Health. Liberty University has pushed for criminal trespassing charges against 2 journalists who pursued stories about why the Evangelical College in Lynchburg has remained partially open during the coronavirus outbreak. The school is led by Jerry Falwell Jr., a supporter of President Donald Trump, who has suggested coverage of the epidemic is overblown. Falwell said the university is conducting classes online and obeying social distancing directives, but he said he has kept the campus open for international students and those with nowhere else to go. On Thursday, there were about 1,000 students still living on campus, roughly 1/8 of its normal residential population. After stories were written saying Liberty's decision caused concerns in the community, the university pursued charges against Alec McGillis, a reporter for ProPublica, and Julia Rendelman, a photographer who illustrated a March 29th story in the New York Times. Liberty's security forces investigated the journalists following publication of their articles, collecting witness accounts that they were on campus without permission, Falwell said. Nearly 150,000 Virginians filed unemployment claims in the last week, the third straight week of record-setting claims in reaction to the coronavirus outbreak, according to the U.S. Department of Labor. It's about a 1/3 increase over the previous week, which set a record in itself. Before the pandemic, weekly jobless claims in Virginia averaged around 2,600. According to the Labor Department, in the last 3 weeks, more than 308,000 Virginians have applied for unemployment. And the real figure may be higher because the Virginia Employment Commission, like other states, has been overwhelmed by the volume of claims, and many applicants report difficulties in getting their claims filed and processed. Virginia's jobless claims continued to accelerate even as the national number of 6.6 million claims essentially leveled off from the previous week. The General Assembly passed more than 2,200 new bills and resolutions this year, and now Governor Ralph Northam has to decide whether to sign them. And the clock is ticking. Ben Pavier with partner station VPM reports.
Governor Northam's deadline for vetoing or changing bills is midnight on Saturday. So far, he's put off decisions on the most high-profile proposals. That includes gun control, minimum wage, and a $1.2 billion transportation package. Northam said on Wednesday that he's working to review legislation while also fighting a pandemic.
And I would say to be patient. We're working through those.
The governor has yet to veto any legislation passed by his fellow Democrats, but he has already signed over 800 bills, including one that makes Election Day a state holiday. He's rubber-stamped legislation easing some restrictions on food stamps, and another bill raising the threshold for reckless driving to 85 miles an hour. Most bills Northam signs will go into effect in July.
Ben Pavier with VPM reporting. Local governments across Virginia are now reassessing their budgets for the coming year. From Virginia Public Radio, Michael Pope reports on what to expect.
You know that new school your community was really excited about? The modernization project at the elementary school? Forget about it. Local governments across Virginia are now reevaluating their budgets, and one of the first things to go is capital spending, especially on expensive school projects. Alexandria Mayor Justin Wilson says this is exactly what happened during the last downturn, and it was a mistake.
We pushed off all capital. We pushed off infrastructure. And the problem is we've spent basically a decade or so catching up on that. It's very, very expensive to play that game of catch-up.
Chris Duncombe at the Commonwealth Institute says a recent study of how Virginia handled the last recession shows spending on facility construction and renovation plummeted 30% in 1 year.
In the long term, that can actually result in higher maintenance costs. So I think that is a strategy that we may see school divisions once again employ. But this time going into the recession, we are actually going to be at a lower level of state funding. We have not yet recovered from the past recession.
The state budget that was proposed before the downturn was going to be the first one to return to pre-recession levels of spending for education. But budget officials are now going to need to reevaluate based on dramatically reduced revenues. That means historic funding initiatives in education will probably be off the table, at least for now. I'm Michael Pope.
And now, here's the next installment of reports from Virginia Public Radio that answer listener questions about COVID-19.
This is the COVID-19 Minute. Expert answers to your questions. The CDC has asked Americans to wear masks that cover the nose and mouth in public. There's no guarantee those masks will protect wearers from infection, but Dr. Alex Crist, a professor of medicine at Virginia Commonwealth University and chair of the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, says they will do two things.
If you're wearing a mask and you cough or you sneeze, you're not going to spread droplets, and that's how the virus spreads. So you can protect other people. The second way masks can help is they limit us touching our faces.
And that keeps us from transmitting virus that might be on our hands to easy access points for the pathogen, the mouth, nose, and eyes. Of course, medical masks are in short supply, and some listeners aren't sure how to make their own. YouTube offers dozens of demonstrations, but at the University of Virginia, infectious disease expert Dr. Amy Mathers recommends one on the CDC's website.
Here's how you can make your own face covering out of an old t-shirt, an old scarf, a bandana or a hand towel.
Something that's washable as we wear these cloth masks over and over again. They're recommending cotton fiber and something that's multi-layered. If you're using something like a bandana, folding it up, the CDC is recommending putting a coffee filter into that bandana.
Some people might skip the mask when exercising outside, which brings us to our next question. Can you catch COVID-19 from someone passing on the sidewalk or trail? The experts offer answers in our next edition of the COVID-19 Minute. I'm Sandy Houseman.
Email your question to wmra@jmu.edu. Type COVID question in the subject heading. The Virginia Department of Health's Thomas Jefferson Health District will host a live virtual town hall this afternoon at 3. The COVID Convo Town Hall will provide answers to commonly asked questions regarding local cases of COVID-19. You'll find information at charlottesville.org/zoom. Well, there's new evidence that cats can become infected with coronavirus, but preliminary studies show that cats do not get sick with the disease, nor are they likely to pass it on to people. Virginia Public Radio's Robbie Harris reports.
A study out of China suggests cats and ferrets can catch coronavirus, but dogs, chickens, pigs, and ducks likely do not. The findings have not yet been peer-reviewed.
There have been some studies that have come out that have shown that cats that are from households where the owner has coronavirus have had an antibody response to it.
Tanya LeRoyth is clinical professor of anatomic pathology, and she directs the clinical lab at Virginia Tech's Animal Laboratory Services.
There was another study that came out where they inoculated cats in the nose with high doses of coronavirus and shown that the cats do contract the disease, but there's no evidence currently that cats are a source of transmission for their owners.
In fact, she says it's the other way around. If cats are being infected, it's from their owners. This week, we learned that tigers in the Bronx Zoo tested positive for the virus. Some had a dry cough, but according to news reports, the big cats are recovering. The source was traced back to a zookeeper who has the disease. The Centers for Disease Control recommend people keep away from all pets. If they have the disease, ask someone else to take care of them or practice the same hand-washing protocol you would with any member of the family. In Blacksburg, I'm Robbie Harris.
Good kitty. Finally today, farmers and healthcare providers in the Stanton area are teaming up to provide fresh, locally grown food to those in the community experiencing food insecurity. But the need has changed due to the pandemic, and so has the way that these providers help. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
Over here, we have our collard greens and two different kinds of kale growing.
Project Grows is a public health, educational, and food access advocacy nonprofit in Stanton. Normally this time of year, they'd be hosting hundreds of local children on field trips to their full production farm, visiting schools with loads of vegetables for the kids to sample, and gearing up for farmers markets. But amidst the COVID-19 pandemic, they've retooled almost all of their programs.
So we're continuing to grow food, but, you know, the way that we're getting that food to kids and families has changed.
Nicole Barrows is the Director of Education at Project Grows.
Access to healthy, fresh foods is needed now more than ever. And many families in our community in Stanton and Augusta are really experiencing food insecurity in a new way.
They've shifted their farmers markets to an online format where they can still accept SNAP benefits, which count double towards their produce. They're also donating vegetables to the Stanton City Schools Food Distribution Program, releasing an educational online video series, and are one of the farms participating in Augusta Health's Fresh Food Box Initiative.
We're working with a whole collaboration of community partners to help address food access and food insecurity that existed before COVID-19 but is amplified during the current pandemic.
Crystal Moyers, Director of Community Outreach, has cultivated a network of local farms from which to buy eggs, produce, and meat. Staff at Augusta Health and their partners at Valley Program for Aging Services then distribute the boxes. About $60 worth of food such as chuck roast, eggs, turnips, and spinach to about 100 food insecure households in Stanton, Waynesboro, and Augusta County.
And talking with other hospital systems that were several weeks ahead of us in the pandemic, what they were seeing was across the country, a lot of the needs that rose to the top was food access, specifically for homebound seniors. And that's actually one of our community health needs assessment needs too that we're working on a triennial basis.
Case managers with the Valley Program for Aging Services identified 50 of their most food insecure senior citizens to receive a fresh food box every other week. On alternate weeks, another 50 boxes will go out to Augusta Health patients and other community members. Each box also holds a drawing created by the kids of hospital employees in the on-site daycare program.
We want to just help bring joy to their day.
Moyers said if it goes well, they may decide to continue the program after the pandemic.
So far, 100% of those that we've called have said, yes, please, we could so use this. Absolutely. You know, thank you so much. To have such a positive response is wonderful. It obviously shows that there's a need.
Cool Breeze Farm in Mount Sydney is providing pork, beef, and eggs to the initiative. Farmer Andrew Crummett said they didn't have enough inventory to meet the demand from Augusta Health, so he got other meat farmers he knew to join the project.
We're really thankful to all the local farms that are willing to chip in. The kind of work the community is pulling together is really great to see in a time like this.
Augusta Health also helps sponsor the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Stanton to help buy a few farm shares from Project Grows. The weekly allotments of produce are then divvied up between 15 to 20 congregants in need. Michael Turner is their senior pastor.
It's a great way to improve the overall health of our congregation.
The church has partnered with Project Grows and Augusta Health for 3 years now to get fresh produce in the hands of homebound seniors and families struggling to make ends meet. Last year, they won an award from the national organization The Balm and Gilead's Healthy Churches Initiative. And services like these are even more important in a time when the elderly are at risk of contracting a potentially fatal virus and many working parents are laid off.
They're reaching out to meet the needs of our community. Hunger is a major problem still in our community. So just a wonderful thing we can meet that need.
Nicole Barrows says that a strong network of relationships is what has allowed Project Grows to mount their pandemic response so quickly.
We have really strong community partnerships with all these organizations like Augusta Health and the schools. So it's been really humbling in the past couple of weeks to, you know, figure out what our response is as a public health organization and as a full production farm. I feel like we've noticed the real importance of leaning on each other and collaboration during this crisis.
For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hakey.
Learn more about that story on the WMRA app or at WMRA.org. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. I really appreciate you listening today. Stay safely connected and do enjoy your Friday.